everybody. Welcome to the Dime Bad Podcast. This is Tyler Wilkinson. We're here with our staff writers. We have Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Peter Bard.
Hello.
And Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And our podcast producer, Alex Cohen.
Hello, hello.
And we have a very special guest today, because we always like to have special guests. But this one is super special, because Peter once referred to this guy as the most unassailable UConn fan, I guess, ever. It's like, it's him and Big Red.
I was just going to say, those are the two.
Yeah, he's the mastermind behind such greats as UConn GIFs, or GIFs, whatever, on the Twitters, and the greatest website ever made, which is UConnHuskyGames.com. So welcome to the podcast, Tom Chandler. What's up, man?
Thank you very much.
How you much? Like that intro?
That was beautiful.
That was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And you can get Tom on Twitter at TCF15, right?
Underscore 15.
Underscore 15. If you miss the underscore, it's going to be terrible. So big news, I guess the biggest story of the week and the reason we actually bumped this podcast up a week early is that the UConn football team knocked off an undefeated Houston team at Pawsarf yesterday, becoming bowl eligible for the first time in like 5 years. So I guess first question, right? This is the biggest win for UConn football since
Notre Dame.
Yeah, since Notre Dame.
Russ, you're talking about USF that sent us to the Fiesta Bowl?
Yes.
See, I feel like I would have better feelings about that win if going to the Fiesta Bowl didn't immediately get followed with us getting screwed and left in the American Conference.
Also getting embarrassed in the Fiesta Bowl and losing our coach in the process.
I don't think getting embarrassed was that big of a deal.
That was to be expected. I figured we were going to get smacked around a little bit. But
here's the thing, though, guys. Like, I feel like this game is more important for other reasons because we need our football team to be good, and I think having us be bowl eligible in Diaco's second year is going to be really, really important the next time conference realignment rolls around because, like, let's be real, the reason we did get passed over is because, like, our football team has been kind of meh, and having a team that, like, won two games last year has been the biggest knock against us. So, like, beating Houston, undefeated, ranked in the top 20 to get bowl eligible, like, this is big. Also, I was there, and it was the shit.
I was going to say, like, for me, I think definitely like a top three win, just given everything. Like, just I was there last night or on Saturday too. You got the sense in the stadium, like, holy shit, we can do this. Like,
how
right,
much
right,
fun was it being there, Tom? I was there too. Like, how much of a blast was that game to be at?
It was a lot of fun. It was actually my first game there this season too. So that was pretty fucking awesome to be able to see Arkeel Newsom just hit that 45-yard rush like right at the beginning of the game too. And you're just like, this is gonna be a good game. Well, I mean, the fact that it happened on senior night too, and the how
they had to like pay for some shit for a long time.
Yeah, and it's almost made even better by the fact that it was Tim Boyle who was the quarterback. You know, I mean, it sucks that Sheriffs went down, but seeing Boyle be the guy actually lead them to the win, I think, was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
How much did you love third string QB Garrett Anderson getting that throw off? Like, that made my heart so happy.
So we were talking about how this game was great for the seniors who had to endure so much, especially over the last couple seasons of just shitty teams in shitty, you know, in front of shitty crowds with a shitty reputation, to see it all sort of come together and then get to go out with a giant win with the fans out on the field with them. That was pretty great.
I mean, this win feels really important right now because of the potential that it has for the program. And I think if we're looking at this in a year and we're sitting in the Big Ten, we'll regard it as the most important win in program history.
What's really cool about this team, especially this specific roster, is you watched them play a great game, and a game that was so tailored to the type of team they have, which was, you know, put some points on the board and then just play defense like hell until the clock runs out. But there was also enough in that game and enough this season to just show you how much room for improvement there still is. You know, there were some drop passes by some underclassmen. There was, you know, Diaco's trademark questionable time management, some illegal substitution penalties, some other dumb penalties, all while pulling off an incredible win and showing off incredible talent by underclassmen. I mean, it just makes me very optimistic for what the next year and two is going to hold for them.
Yeah, this team starts 11 freshmen and sophomores, and it's only going to lose 5 starters total, and only one on offense.
Right.
Actually, Noel Thomas is the only one that's really like him. He's a junior. The rest of them are all sophomores and freshmen.
Yeah, you got Sheriff's a redshirt sophomore, and Newsom as a sophomore.
Tommy Myers is a sophomore. Yep. Summers is a sophomore.
Carrizola.
Thank you.
Filorenzo.
Yep.
And those guys look like pros.
Right.
Yeah.
I would not – I mean, Luke Carrizola, I think, is going to play linebacker in the NFL, and I think Filorenzo is going to be a defensive tackle. Those guys absolutely look like pro-caliber players.
We probably should mention there were two injuries in this game that are potentially pretty serious. One is definitely serious. Tommy Myers is out for the year with some form of a lower leg injury. It looked like a knee in the game, but it's
– Didn't he break his ankle?
Is that what it was?
I think, yeah, because – when I saw him, he came out on crutches when I was at the game, and he was on crutches, and his ankle and foot was...
Yeah, it was really taped up. Wrapped, yeah.
That's a shitty thing to happen, but...
Usually knees require surgery, ankles don't always, so let's hope he can avoid the operating table.
But then there's Sheriffs who got clocked in the head on that viciously dirty play.
Dirty.
Yeah. So dirty.
Yeah, so I mean, he may have trouble when he's 50, but he'll probably be fine this weekend, right?
I would doubt very much he plays against Temple.
They should not play him.
It's a game that really doesn't mean a whole lot for UConn. I mean, they're bowl eligible. They're not going to go to the American Championship game. No reason to run that risk with Sheriffs next week at Temple.
And there's no point in risking it, you're right. Especially if he can come back, you know, after Christmas and play in a bowl game, you know.
Playing
more power
football,
to him. Enjoy your rest, buddy. Post some pictures on Instagram. They're great.
It's a bad plan.
So anyway, so next year we got almost the whole offense coming back, most of the defense, and a lot of the big playmakers. What do we think they're going to do next year?
Well, you think they're going to win 10 games, don't you?
I said I could see it.
Well, you're the one who predicted they'd win six games this year. So
I was exactly right this year. The only thing is I swapped the Central Florida and South Florida games. I thought we would beat South Florida and lose to Central Florida.
You could be exact. You could actually be wrong still. There could be a seventh win here.
There could be eight wins.
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, if they go and they lose the Temple, that will have been to the game exactly what I predicted was going to happen at the beginning of the season.
You didn't predict them beating Houston, though.
Other than I did. I said they were going to beat either Houston or Temple. But I didn't know that Houston was going to be this good this year, though. They weren't good last year.
That's true.
But what I want to say is the offensive line, which was frankly maligned coming into the season for how bad that offense was.
The maligned line?
The maligned line.
Who would have done such a thing?
That front five has actually developed into like a really nice core. They've done a really good job.
Well, I mean, I feel like that was the conversation the whole time was last year they were bad, but they were super young. You had two freshmen on that line.
Don't they get their best – isn't their best lineman injured too? Wasn't he out for the season at the beginning of the season, Crozier? And he's coming back next year too, so.
Oh, hey.
So that should be good.
Yeah, they're going to be – I mean, it was funny. I mentioned this before because I was watching – here's an awesome shout-out for you, Tom. I was watching the replay of the game on UConnHuskyGames.com today. And that first drive of the game where Newsom breaks off that huge 40-something yard run and Sheriffs hits Thomas on that little out route in the corner of the end zone right at the pylon. And then after that, after Sheriffs went out and just the slog of Newsom like running into the line for a yard or two every game, like I started questioning, well, maybe even last year it wasn't really the line. It was just it's so hard to run an offense without a passing threat. And even in that one Houston game, you could see it. And Houston has a good defense, but you could see it very night and day with the first drive compared to the rest of the game.
They're really tall and strong. They're very good at being that.
And I hear the recruits coming in next year are also quite large. They've got a lot of size coming in already next year.
Yeah, that was a huge thing for Diaco. He just emphasized like bringing in gigantic high school seniors just to be
size and GPA.
To play football.
Yeah.
I was like I saw the like the height and heights. I was kind of making a joke before, but I honestly was looking at like the height and weight of the line because they show it in the stats, and I was like, wow, that looks like what you see on an NFL line. That's like
they're all well over 300 pounds.
Diaco should basically just follow around wherever UCF basketball is recruiting and sign them up.
Well, we've got two offensive tackles coming in. Oh wait, no, that's.
I want Justin McBride at left guard.
Justin McBride could probably help that football team.
Probably could.
He could help me just by being around.
You love him so much.
Guys, tell me McBride listens to this podcast.
They got two offensive tackles coming in next year, and they are 6'6" and 6'7".
As like 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good. I think I would be disappointed with fewer than 8 wins next year. Ooh. I want to contend for the league title.
All right.
I mean, if we go in and we lose a Temple, then if we win the bowl game, that's 7 wins right there. And if we do, then I think you expect at least another game. And so I agree with Peter. If you anything less than 8, I think would be a disappointment.
Oof.
Yeah, and I think that's the importance of the game on Saturday. I don't think it's necessarily that they're going to a bowl game, even though that's great. But there are going to be 80 bowl-eligible teams. 80 teams are going to bowls. It's not the biggest accomplishment in the world, but it's setting that bar to know that that is the bare minimum of what we need to expect, especially from this group that is still young and still going to continue to grow. I think it is realistic next year to say we want to contend for that conference title.
Which conference, though?
We'll be in the American next year. That's another thing. One bowl game isn't going to get you into the Big Ten.
Peter, give us the Boston College basketball attendance figures. Do you remember?
I think they're about 7,500 for the first 3 games, and they're literally giving tickets away. Like, there's a thing like
7,500 total.
7,500 total for the
total.
First
3 games. 2,500 something a game or something like
that.
And
they are not charging people. They're giving away free tickets for nothing. Not like buy a football ticket. Not like buy a small drink.
I'm about
like,
to laugh, but actually,
you click this and you can come to the basketball game.
Free tickets kind of sound like a ripoff. I mean, I'm just trying to think of the number they would pay me to go to see a Boston College game.
Especially they've been playing terrible teams.
I'm not going for less than $20. I want free parking too.
Snack. Like, maybe some free food. Like, here, Megan, here's a snack, and you can watch this basketball game. Like, maybe I'd go.
If they fed me, I would go.
If they gave me free food,
but I would
go.
Cheer.
Sounds like it's perfect for homeless people, then. They should just hand out flyers. And
yeah. In the spirit of Thanksgiving, it's a soup kitchen / Boston College versus, like, you know,
Could
Iona.
You imagine them bringing in 8,000 homeless people to a Boston College game? Having him fill the arena?
To answer your question, yes.
I should have reserved a shit ton of tickets and gathered up, like, gone to the Common and, like, found all the homeless people, like, you guys want to go see a game? They'll do the job no one else wants.
Oh, and now you know why it takes Tyler so long to edit this podcast.
Oh, man.
They're all fucking terrible people.
So, wait. So, you other guys, let's make some predictions. I'm not the only one out here on a limb.
I'll say 8 games. I like that. I like 8 games.
You also have to remember their out-of-conference schedule is a lot easier next year.
I'm going 9 wins.
Nice. Yeah, I think I'm at 9 wins, too. I think 9 wins is a pretty good projection.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, 9 wins is where I think we'll be. I would be disappointed with fewer than 8. I'm hoping for 10, maybe 11.
Oh, I like it. I like it. That's a nice prediction.
I'll say 8. I think we're going to get 8 wins next year.
Okay, pessimist Russ.
4.
I said 9. Yeah. I said 9. What New Year's Bowl do you think we're going to go to next year?
Ooh.
I'm really hoping for that Military Bowl because one of the ESPN guys has us playing Duke at the Military Bowl. If it's in Florida, I'm not going. But if it's in Maryland, I might drive to Maryland.
You can Airbnb Randy Etzel's house.
Oh, God, that is...
Well, shut it down. I'm not getting any better than that.
So I want to give you guys a chance to be pessimistic, especially Russ, because it's his bread and butter, and say in 5 years, Bob Diaco will be the head coach of blank.
UConn, baby.
Okay.
I actually think it's optimistic to say Notre Dame.
Okay.
And the reason I think it's optimistic to say that is because I think it will mean that he has done some good things for UConn.
They're not going
to
hire him if he's mediocre at UConn.
Right.
That's true.
Notre Dame fans are already like, I hope Brian Kelly wins a championship and retires, and then we hire Diaco. That's really a thing I read today on Reddit. So.
Shout out Reddit.
He's not going to stay. If he's good enough to leave, he'll leave. You know, we hire a hot young assistant, and we'll be able to continue to – if Diaco gets the Notre Dame job, the next Diaco will be looking for this job. So we're not going to get a guy who sticks around for 25 years and wins his 3 national championships in football. But we'll get somebody who is, you know, willing to go out and earn it, and wants to be the next big thing and knows that this is an opportunity to get to one of the really top jobs. And if you go get the Notre Dame job, that might be the best job in college football.
So is that your official guess? 5 years from now, Diaco's coaching in Notre Dame?
If things go really well, I could see it. Just guess. All right. Let me say I want a Big Ten team.
Iowa.
Yeah, I was thinking because he played Iowa.
Yeah, I was going to say Iowa, Notre Dame first.
I would have said Iowa before this year started, but now they're keeping their coach because they're good.
I'm going to say Wisconsin. Oh. No, Nebraska. That's what I'm going with Nebraska.
Okay. I'm going to join Megan and say UConn. Do we want to take this jump to do some irresponsible rumor mongering?
Yeah.
Let's get to that.
Because I think we need to talk about that hockey rumor.
Yeah, Peter, lay it on us.
All right, so there's a rumor among the same unreliable lunatics on Twitter as normal.
Don't give away your sources.
Hold on.
That the Big Ten is interested in UConn hockey. So there may be negotiations going on about UConn hockey joining the Big Ten. Now, if that is attached with some sort of, if things go well, we'll see, sort of agreement, I can see that maybe being feasible. If it's just for hockey, then no, they wouldn't do that.
No, because it's Hockey East is where UConn hockey wants to be and should be. I mean, really, the Big Ten's kind of a step down in hockey as far as conference goes.
It would just cost a lot of money for no good reason.
Well, and the conference isn't as good. Like, it doesn't have the same prestige as Hockey East does. And in addition to the fact that, geographically speaking, it's all of our rivals. And it is, as you said, I mean, the travel's a lot easier. You get to play Boston College twice a year. Like, it's all the Northeastern hockey schools.
Yeah,
I would want
to stay in Hockey East.
This is why I want us to move to the ECC, because then we can stay in Hockey East. We move all of our programs to the ECC. We get to play Syracuse and Duke and Louisville and all of the other teams in the ACC twice a year. It'd be fucking great.
Stop right there, Megan. I'm going to interrupt real quick. Because this is a great segue for, so every Friday, we answer three of your questions in the Dimebag mailbag. You can submit your questions. Right before this podcast, we solicited some on Twitter. This one's from @TrevorBandy, who Megan just answered the question, but now we're going to throw us the rest. He says, Big Ten or ACC, which one do you prefer, and which one is more realistic for UConn? So we know Megan's answer. What about the rest of you?
Big Ten for both for me. I think the football league is going to be stronger, and for the immediate future, that's the horse that's going to bring you home.
Yeah, but we're losing all the rivalries. That's the thing. Like, we have history with teams in the ACC. We don't really have any history with teams in the Big Ten.
I'll make a rivalry with Maryland happily.
Michigan State.
And Michigan
it's just
State.
There. Like,
it will be, though.
It'll be 3 years, and it'll be our bitter rivalry with Michigan. Like, that'll be a huge game, because those are huge programs with super involved student bodies and alumni, and will drive each other bananas instantly. That is what rivalries are.
I'm ready to say this right now. Fuck you, Northwestern. Come at me.
That would be a very rewarding rivalry.
That being said, I am I'm on Megan's side. I want ACC. I want basketball. Tom, what are your thoughts?
I agree. Going there, I think football has a better chance of winning the conference as opposed to going to the Big Ten. I don't know if UConn would ever reach the level of being able to beat an Ohio State, but I think they could be in the top three teams of the ACC eventually. I want to see Duke come to Gamble.
Yes.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't be upset if we got in the ACC.
Don't you want to play Pitt again in Gamble?
Oh my God, our conference schedule will be so fun.
I wouldn't be upset if we got in the Big 12.
Right.
Yeah. Like, if I find out tomorrow that UConn and Cincinnati are going to the Big 12, I'll be like, good enough.
So where will Kevin Ollie be coaching in 5 years?
Fuck yourself. It's UConn.
Iowa.
I guess let's use this as a segue. Are we done with football, you think? We're probably done with football,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're good.
We also wanted to talk about the UConn men, who have won their first three games of the year against Cupcakes, Maine, New Hampshire, and the Fur Men. But as Peter wrote today, sort of the one question we had coming in was, how would this team coexist, or more importantly, how fast could they come together with so many new faces? And Peter, as you kind of said today, those concerns have kind of been alleviated for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it could not really have gone better. Like, yeah, they're not great teams, but There was never a question that they were going to win all those games handily. Everybody's contributed. Everybody's played well at some point. You know, I mean, we've had 6 different guys score double-figure points. 10 different guys have played at least 15 minutes in a game. Like, everybody's getting burned. Everybody's putting up some numbers. And they're playing well with each other. You know, they seem to have figured out what their respective roles are going to be. You know, and they've improved in important. I mean, look how much. I mean, it's early, but look how well Purvis is shooting. Has he ever had a 3-game stretch shooting this well in his career?
No, he's like 47% at the moment, right?
Yeah, and he's. I mean, on a lot of volume. Hamilton's handle is much tighter, and he's looking much more aggressive. Yeah.
And he's leading the team
in
rebounding.
He's put on weight. Brima's put on weight. Nolan seems to have come back to life to some degree. And then the new guys, Miller, is better than I think anybody even thought. Mm-hmm. Gibbs has been exactly as advertised. Adams has been really, really good.
I think even Enoch's better than we expected.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he hasn't gotten many minutes so far, but I definitely feel pretty good about him being a starter eventually.
Mm-hmm. Enoch's probably averaging 3.5 rebounds per game in 7 minutes.
That's ridiculous.
It's 20 per 40.
For someone big, who's as young as he is, to have the athleticism he does just makes me very, very happy about his potential.
Tom, for you, what's been the most exciting part of the men's team for you?
Just the fact that we've scored over 80 points in every game. I mean, like, regardless of competition, these last few years, even when, like, last year in the championship season when we opened it, we weren't scoring this much. We weren't scoring this well. So, actually, randomly, like, looked up and checked out how many points we scored this year so far, and I think it's like something like 269 in the first 3 games, and nice. I don't think we've scored that much since the 08-09 year.
Damn.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they're 89 points per game right now.
Yeah.
They're number 2 in the country in points per possession.
They are putting Buffalo Wild Wings out of business.
Just probably
one can only hope.
Do they sponsor this podcast? No? Okay, no. Then that's good.
One thing that I'll say about the way this team looks initially, too, they're damn likable. The way they play together, the way their interactions on the court, even when some of the guys last year who were really frustrating, like Cassell and Nolan, even when they're on the court, they're contributing in their own way. It seems like everybody, I mean, obviously we haven't been tested by real competition yet. Granted, New Hampshire wasn't that as much of a cupcake as the other two, but they're coming in and making real contribution, and you can see you can see what's going on in practice.
Yeah, and something I really like about this team too, kind of going off of that, is that they can beat you in so many different ways, which is not something we've seen a lot recently. There's no more, you know, give the ball to Napier or Boatwright and let them do something. The first game, you know, Kevin Ollie touched on this today in that ESPN interview. First game, they had 13 dunks, dropped 100 on Maine. Next game, New Hampshire went with the zone, and we made 13 threes. And it's just, it's so refreshing to see kind of a multidimensional offense from UConn, which is something that we were missing.
Yeah, and Ali talked about this after the Furman game, too, how teams were able to just focus so hard on Boatwright that even if Boatwright ended up with his 20 points, it took so much work and so much emphasis on the offense that they were just a really easy team to guard last year. And this year, we've seen it already where Gibbs scores 20 points 2 games in a row. The third game, he's sort of neutralized. And Adams comes in and drops 14.
And on a given night, anyone in the starting five can lead UConn in scoring.
Yeah, and you just look down the roster. I mean, Hamilton's been relatively quiet. You still look at his numbers, and, you know, he's at 8.7 points, 8.3 rebounds, and 6.3 assists. And you can argue he's been one of the quietest starters on the team. They have a roster that's built so that if one of those guys goes cold, there are so many other options to pick up those points. Which was really lacking. It was like that a little bit on the 2014 team, but this is the most balanced UConn team I can remember in a long time, maybe since that 09 team.
I was going to say that's I think the comparison that keeps getting made to that team is that every position you've got somebody who can really play, who can be the guy to take over that game.
and win a game for you. There's not going to be an easy way to shut the offense down. There's not going to be, oh, this is the thing that works against them. You know, we've already seen them beat a zone, which has always been a problem.
Yeah.
Twice.
How awesome is that? Watching them beat a ton of points.
Yeah. Right. Normally the only zone we could beat is Syracuse.
Yeah, it's a nice change of pace for us.
Yeah.
But if, like, there's a zone that's actively being coached, is what I'm saying.
Right.
I mean, I said that I expected Sean Miller to be good, but I was expecting him to be a tough rebounder and maybe an offensive option, but I didn't expect him to be the kind of weapon that he appears to be.
Okay, I'm going to go to another mailbag question. This one's from at DuncanBishop24. Duncan asks, what's the highest ranking UConn can achieve in the AP this year? Will Michigan, Cuse, and Gonzaga sweep push us into the top 10?
Could.
If they sweep those three, yes.
Yeah, they're
in the top 10 if they do that.
Yeah, I think we sweep those three teams. I think make a good showing at Battle for Atlantis, we'd definitely be top 10.
Do you think they will sweep, Tom?
Yeah, I do. I was reading today, I think with Michigan, I know like that their depth isn't that great right now. With like Zach Irvin and Spike Albrecht, I know that they're recovering from some off-season injuries or off-season surgeries, whatever it is. And I just think that if you watch that Xavier game against Michigan where Xavier just went into Michigan and just really just destroyed them, I don't know how Xavier compares with UConn, but I just think the talent that UConn has and the depth that they do have, that UConn could handle Michigan easily. I think the next round matchup with Charlotte would be... No, Charlotte or Syracuse, I think this is like the time for UConn to shine and kind of really show everybody who's kind of been underrating them that UConn is a top 10 team.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're on paper, we're definitely the better team. You know, I think that if we play well, they're not going to be able to beat us. You know, if we play like we've been playing, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape.
The biggest sigh of relief for me has been that Gibbs and Purvis seem to be getting along really well in terms of how they play on the court. I don't know
And Adams.
Yeah. Well, and Adams. Yeah, and they're letting Adams come in and have his moments too. They seem to be coexisting without any evidence.
Ego. There doesn't seem to be a lot of ego.
Right. Calhoun's getting touches and Cassell's getting touches. Like, yeah, everybody's getting to play a role.
I think a lot of that has to do with probably how the way last season ended too, and how last season was such a disappointment that everyone on the team is probably like, you know what, screw it, whatever we got to do just to get to the top again. If I'm having a bad game and you're having a good game, that's fine by me. If we win the game, that's all that matters. But one of the things that I kind of want to touch on too, I mean, we mentioned him before, Ronnie Purvis, but I think a huge thing is that he's the same player right now as he was at the end of the season last year. So that's continuing, which is, I think, a huge benefit to this team. And I honestly was very surprised at how well he's shooting and the range he has on some of these threes. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, I was a little worried based off the success he had, especially, you know, in the AAC tournament last year, that he would come in and try to basically impose himself on the offense and take too many shots and basically, you know, have the offense run through him, whether or not it was for the best of the team. And, you know, he's shown, I mean, he's in double figures in each of the three games, but he's never led them in scoring. He's doing exactly what he should be doing in this offense, which is picking his spots. And that's why he's shooting at such a high clip, is he's not forcing it and he's not taking bad shots. He had 7 assists and 1 turnover against the Furmen. So he's really, I think, matured and found his spot in the offense. They look really good.
Well, and that's one of the nice things about such a veteran group like this. I mean, you figure Gibbs, Purvis, and Miller have all played at least 2 schools, so they've seen a bunch of different programs. Gibbs and Hamilton are from heavy-duty basketball families. These guys know how this works. They all have a very professional approach here, and they understand what goes into this and what you need to do in order to maximize the team's chances. And I think one of the few nice things about the success that you've seen the last couple of years at Kentucky is these guys realize if the team's winning, people are going to notice me.
Right.
I don't have to put up huge numbers. I don't have to play a zillion minutes, and I can still be the number 2 pick in the draft or whatever the hell.
Right.
But also another guy who bears mentioning is Facey. Facey has come in and I think given some real energy and some valuable minutes. And I think if he can spell foul trouble for Brima and Miller, I mean, he's a very valuable player.
Facing only 15 minutes a game is third on the team with 5.3 rebounds, which, by the way, is the exact mark as Brima.
And I think one of the really great things about having Miller is kind of the rub-off effect that he's going to have on Facey, especially with Facey being a junior. I mean, Facey could end up being a starter next year for us and just having a much better year than he did when he's a starter in his sophomore year, obviously.
Tom, did you go to UConn?
Yeah.
What year were you there?
I was there from 2007, the 07-08 year to I graduated in after the Kemba year, so 2011.
Like how we measure our attendance by championship. Exactly.
We tried to figure out how old you are based on what you have up on your website with UConn Husky Games, because you have some great older stuff. I'm actually a little surprised to learn right now that you're a bit younger than us.
Yeah, I grew up a UConn fan. I had everybody, my dad, my mom worked at UConn, so it was just everything around us was all about UConn. And
that was like us. Our parents both went to UConn.
And Tom, did your parents videotape a lot of UConn games? Is this how your collection started?
Actually, a lot of this stuff that I've gotten isn't even mine. Actually, this entire, I guess if we're going to segue into UCHG right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this whole thing started, actually, another guy on the Boneyard, and he's on Twitter. I guess shout at Gamble Crazies. He's another vital component of UConn Husky Games.
Shout, buddy.
He actually reached out to me because he was recording some games, and he actually had always been looking for more games, but he reached out to me. He was like, do you want to make a website? Because he had found, actually, a Kentucky website that was similar to UConn Husky Games that just had a giant catalog of games. And he found that, and he's like, do you want to make a UConn-centric website similar to this? And I said, sure. But, like, you know, my dad, kind of back to how this all started for me, like, collecting the games. My dad would always record, like, some of, like, the really good games. He'd always actually record the games and keep the really good ones. One of the very first games I remember him recording, obviously, was the Duke National Championship game in 99.
We recorded that one, too.
Me, too. I probably still have that VHS.
Yeah. That was always on repeat. And then another favorite one was the overtime game in Arizona, where, like, Emeka Okafor had, like, a triple-double. Yeah, and so he had those two games, and then he kind of had a little like collection of like some like random games. It wasn't really like a sequential order of games or anything like that. So he had those, and then Gamble Crazies reached out to me. He had a lot, and so we just started putting stuff together. And like once people knew that we were making a site, we put the contact page up. A lot of people reached out to us, and there was actually this one guy who I don't know if you guys remember, but on Twitter I took a picture of all the VHS tapes that he gave to us, and it was an insane amount of games. It was probably over like 400 VHS tapes.
Amazing.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wow. That guy's my hero.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the process then? You have to like hook the thing up to a computer and like play the game and record it onto the computer?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the VHS tapes are a pain in the ass because you kind of have to.
You can't just like rip it. You got to like actually do it.
Yeah. You got to play the entire tape. If you get like a DVD, then you just rip it and it takes like 10 minutes. But the VHS tapes, you got to. I take about like 2 hours, and so I still probably have like over 150 tapes downstairs in the storage. I've just like taken a break because like I've hit a wall. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
What's in there? What's in that you're excited to put up? Like, do you have any idea like what's on the list?
It's all women's basketball tapes right now. I know. I powered through the men's basketball games.
What years are these? Like the dying? Are there any like years?
It's 2001, 2002, 2003.
Oh, those are my years. Wow. That's when I was there. Oh, there's some really good fucking games in there, man.
There are, yeah.
Tom, I think we need to get you an intern.
I know, right?
Russ,
yeah.
Thanks.
So, Tom, I speak for all of us at A Dime Back and every UConn fan everywhere in saying thank you for doing this.
Doing God's work, my friend.
Bonus
God's
thank you for cutting out the commercials. Bless you for that.
Actually, you know what? I have to thank the guy who gave me the VHS tapes because he edited out the commercials himself.
Oh,
which is like,
wow.
Holy shit.
Wow.
I wish he left a couple in just for the nostalgia of like some 20-year-old commercials.
So, Tom, obviously you've put up all these games in full, but also the work that you've done with Pump Up videos and Kemba highlight reels and
Neil's Gafai highlight reels.
All that shit is so incredible and awesome, and like I can't say enough. That's we're lucky. We are all lucky to have that.
I mean, I have so much fun doing those because, I mean, I kind of like editing and doing like kind of like video work and stuff. It's a kind of a hobby of mine, but it's a lot of fun, like just putting that stuff together and putting a sick song to all UConn highlights. And I got to say, like, I think we're all in agreement that UConn's pretty fucking awesome at basketball. And so they all provide a lot of great highlights just to put anything to. So they make it.
I enjoy them thoroughly. I have seen most of them like 47 times. The pump up videos, awesome. I get so pumped up for them. Like, yes.
So they're working.
Good. That's good. I'm glad I'm not failing because that would be pretty awesome.
No, they're awesome. You do good work.
Thank you.
So Tom, have you run into any problems hosting these videos? I know we talked to at some point in the past about the semi-extraordinary lengths you went to try to avoid sort of violating rights and copyrights and trademarks.
I mean, I know sometimes when during the 2014 when I was like posting highlights of like, the national championship, like CBS, if you post anything to YouTube within like 24 hours of one of those games happening, CBS takes it down immediately. And then you get like that copyright strike, and so you get like a knock on your account, and so you can't do things for like about 6 months. So it's like there's a few. I mean, I keep a lot of the videos unlisted, so just they can't search for them on YouTube.
Yeah.
But there's still stuff that hits you. I mean, you get copyright strikes, but they don't block it. They don't take it down. They just pretty much put ads on the video and make money off of it.
Well, here's my commitment to you: if you go to prison, we will raise your money to bail you out.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Megan will defend you. She's a lawyer.
She's a lawyer.
Pro bono, buddy.
Okay, perfect. I'll keep that in mind in case there's some cops knocking on my door.
So, Tom, let's talk a little bit about UConn GIST, because this is another thing you sort of set up. It seemed seemingly on a whim, just because you were kind of doing it for fun.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like exploded. You're followed by, you know, a lot of the players. You know, it's got a huge audience now.
Yeah, that was actually, I did not expect anything like that to happen. It was kind of like Twitter made GIFs or GIFs or however you want to say it.
How do you say it?
I say GIF.
Thank you.
I do too, but then I was questioning it.
I say GIF because my first avatar or whatever, the Twitter profile pic was actually of Neil's GIFI. It just made sense. So it was just UConn GIFs, and I was like, I'm going with this.
Also, the G stands for graphics, so G, not J. GIF is peanut butter.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Perfect. Yeah. So I guess we're all in agreement that it's GIFs. But yeah, Twitter allowed GIFs, and I was just like, this is a perfect opportunity because I was making some GIFs just out of fun, and I was like, let's set this up and see what happens. It actually was perfect because I remember the first GIF I made was that one of Jim Boeheim drawing on the board, 4 is greater than 1.
It's a classic.
Yeah. And so it worked out. It just grew from there.
And UConn GIFs is now up to 3,138 Twitter followers.
Holy shit.
Really?
Guy's an expert at the internet. He's the king of the boneyard. Did you know? No one has more likes than TCF.
Well, that's the least shocking thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I don't go out in public and tell people that very much.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to the A Dime Bat podcast. We'll be back probably in another week or two, we'll do another podcast. This was sort of a special edition with all the goings-ons. But I want to give a big thanks to Tom. Tom, thanks for coming out. And thanks for all your great work with UConn Husky Games and UConn GIFs. We really appreciate it, man.
All right, thank you. Thank you for having me on here. I had a good time.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
Yay!
Yay, Tom!
All right. All right, later, dorks.
Until next time, we'll see you. Thanks.